climate change and what it really means.
The dice are loaded, basically. We expect to roll snake eyes more often now as a result of the fact that we're warming up the planet.
Plus, we'll revisit a singing legend. I'm Susan Barnett, and it's coming up on 51%, The Women's Perspective. Studies show we're beginning to all believe climate change is fact, not fiction. But at the same time, support for action to slow it is evaporating. What's going on? Stanford researchers found that support for policies to support government action on sustainable energy alternatives or incentives to develop solar or wind power have dropped 5% each year since 2010. Resistance is particularly high among conservative voters who still tend to mistrust climate change data. This week, I want to share a conversation I had with Heidi Cullen, chief climatologist at Climate Central, a nonprofit climate science organization in Princeton, New Jersey. It was a very strange winter. It's been a stranger spring, and there are people who will say, CCC, it's climate change. What do you think?
I think that we need to begin to think about climate change when we think about our weather. I think that for most of us, we don't necessarily get a real feel for what climate change is until, we look at our windows and we want to get a sense of what does climate change mean for me, where I live, moving into the future. One of the things we know really well about climate change is that it piles up in certain extremes. So when we see record temperatures like the kinds of records that we saw in March, these are the kinds of things that we expect to see more and more of as we move forward in time.
And from a meteorological standpoint, are you looking at the reasons for this change? Is it a natural cyclical thing? Is it due to us? Is it a combination?
It is a combination. And so I think that it's really important to talk about natural climate variability, just the kinds of things that Mother Nature does on her own, and the fact that there are tremendous cycles in nature. And I think, one way to think about climate and to get a feel for the kinds of variability that we see in our climate system, the seasonal cycle is the best experience that we have with climate variability. There's other types of climate variations as well, things like El Nino and its opposite phase called La Nina. There's all different kinds of natural climate variability. And so when people say, well, how do we know that this isn't just a cycle and that it is actually a warming trend? Well, that's a really good scientific question, and it's one that we've been studying for a very, very long time. And what we know from the increasing record of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is we know that we are adding additional carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. So the increasing trend in carbon dioxide is linked to the increasing trend in temperature. And we know through chemical fingerprinting techniques that about one out of four carbon dioxide molecules in the atmosphere today were put there by us. And so that test and other scientific tests that we do allow scientists to say with tremendous confidence that the kinds of warming events that we're experiencing now, that the increasing temperature that we've seen play out over the past 30 years especially, that it's us. It is not Mother Nature. It is us. It is not a natural cycle. It is actually a warming trend.
And yet the weather extremes then that you're talking about are more a part of the cycle?
And so the weather extremes are, again, they're going to be a combination of natural variability, of just day-to-day weather, but piled on top of that is the fact that when we increase the average temperature of the planet, it increases the likelihood of seeing certain kinds of extreme weather events. Specifically, we expect heat waves to become more intense, to last longer, to become more frequent. We expect rainfall events to be heavier and to come in shorter downpours. We expect to see more intense and more frequent droughts. So when it rains harder, but then there's longer dry spells in between. So this warming trend, this roughly 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit of warming that we've caused over the past century, it manifests itself in the weather, and we have a really good understanding of the physics of certain types of increases in extreme weather events. And so when you think about climate change, think about the fact that it's kind of like, you know, rolling the dice. And so the dice are now stacked towards a more specific outcome. We expect, you know, to the dice are loaded, basically. We expect to roll snake eyes more often now as a result of the fact that we're warming up the planet.
And is the fact that we have warmed up the planet and apparently continue to, is that also accelerating the warming process? Is it kind of a cumulative effect?
So when you look out over the long period of climate history, and when you look at just all of the natural cycles that I was describing, right now, the warming trend that we have seen, the single most important part of this warming trend is the speed with which it has warmed. You know, on her own, you know, Mother Nature doesn't warm quite as quickly as we've seen over the past 30 years. The rate of change is incredible. We can look back over time and see other periods of incredible warming, and the part that makes scientists so worried, you know, is not the fact that it hasn't been warmer in the past, it has, but the fact that at times in the past where things have changed as dramatically as they're changing now, it's basically corresponded to extinction events. And so what worries scientists about climate change, the fact that we are altering our climate system, is that it increases our risks. It basically sets up a climate system that we're not very well adapted to.
And I'm sure when you say things like that, people either get terrified or look at you and say, you're a gloom and doom person.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, honestly, I don't want to be a gloom and doom person in the sense that, you know, climate change is a tricky subject because our climate system works on these long time scales. So climate change, you know, has been playing out over the past century. It will move more and more quickly as we move forward in time because we're pumping more and more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. So it's going to speed up as we move forward. But this is a problem that is what I would call a long-term risk that needs to be managed. And, you know, it's interesting because in a way, you know, we talk about climate change and it has tremendous impacts on ecosystems. And, you know, one of the things that we're concerned about is that when you mess with the climate, you shift the timing of things. And so things like agriculture and water resources and just the way species migrate and move around, all of those things get affected. So when you mess with the timing, you really mess with sort of the deep ecology of things. And so that's a real concern. That's a real risk. You know, on the other hand, when you talk about the climate system, we're actually also talking about energy because fossil fuel burning is the most significant cause of the warming. And so, you know, we need to talk about things like, where do we get our energy from? How do we begin to rebuild our energy infrastructure? And, you know, interestingly enough, the U.S. military is as concerned about that as a climate scientist is. I think it's actually really interesting because when you look at who's showing a lot of leadership on climate change and renewable energy, it's indeed the military. The military right now has a policy in place where they're looking to increase the amount of renewable energy they're using 25% by the year 2025. And the incentive for this is because right now, when you have men and women in combat, 70 to 80% of the convoys that are running around in Iraq and Afghanistan on the ground right now, 70 to 80% of those convoys are transporting either fuel or water. So where we get our fuel matters tremendously. And if we can reduce our dependence on fossil fuels, the military sees this as a way to keep men and women on the ground in war zones safer.
And as things stand right now and for the very near future, when you were talking about changing the timing of things, are our growing seasons changing already, or is it just beginning to happen?
we're seeing the beginnings of it now, you know. And I think what we really need to think about when we experience these extreme weather events and we want to understand how it's related to climate change is the fact that we're getting glimpses of the future. And the thing about climate change is if we choose to do nothing, we choose to just continue to burn fossil fuels, business as usual, if we don't choose to adapt our infrastructure to be prepared for changes, then by the end of the century, by the middle of the century and beyond, we're going to be moving into a world that we're not adapted for. And so people who study agriculture, for example, they look at things like crop yields. And as we were just saying, climate change increases the likelihood of heat extremes. We know, for example, that corn crops, they have a temperature threshold. That temperature threshold is about 84 degrees Fahrenheit. And so once you cross that threshold, it begins to affect the yield. And so if you imagine a future as we move forward in time, if we do nothing, then we're increasing the likelihood of hotter and hotter days. And scientists have projected that we could see significant crop yield losses as we move forward. And so again, I think the real takeaway here is that this is a long-term risk, and the sooner we get started working on it, the better off we are. And it really requires us to trust the science, to trust the fact that we understand how greenhouse gases, how carbon dioxide in the atmosphere will change our climate in such a way that makes us really, really vulnerable.
Heidi Cullen is chief climatologist at Climate Central, a nonprofit climate science organization in Princeton, New Jersey. Coming up, part two of our conversation with climatologist Heidi Cullen, plus an inside look at life as a woman musician in the record business. If you missed part of this show or want to hear it again, visit the 51% archives at WAMC.org. This week's show is number 1193.
It's cancellation day. Yes, the big adios is just a few hours away. It's last call to do your shopping at the last mall. The
2011 was an unusually cool year, and that led skeptics to say that was proof that climate change was a myth. But much of the country had a winter with no snow, and the spring has brought heat waves, drought, and colossal tornadoes. It's time to take another look at what climate change means. Heidi Cullen is chief climatologist at Climate Central, and she says the data's available, and climate change is happening.
I think that there's a lot of work being done. The United States National Academy of Sciences recently released a report where they brought together the best scientists in our country to look at the climate change problem and basically put out a roadmap. And what they found was that we don't know everything about climate change, but we know enough to get started. And what they found was that the sooner we get started on this issue, the cheaper it is to manage and the better off and safer we are. So it is one of these problems where, you know, the American public does need to get behind it and support it and say, you know what, I think that by addressing the climate change issue, we are addressing our energy infrastructure issue. We're addressing how to make our cities and towns more safe, more prepared for the kinds of severe weather events that we might see moving forward in time. So I think there's a lot of work being done, but, you know, as with many things, there's a lot more work that needs to be done.
All right. Can I ask you a couple of doomsday questions just because sometimes people need to be scared to be convinced?
Sure.
When you foresee the future with nothing having been done to address it, in the U.S., which parts of the country are the worst impacted first?
It's a really good question. I think scientists are most concerned about coastal populations. We know that sea level rise is going to continue. The projections right now say that sea level rise will occur somewhere between 2 and 7 feet by the end of the century. And these are, you know, these are huge things to imagine. You know, imagining the coastline actually changing, you know, the actual mm-hmm. outline of the United States looking different if we choose not to do anything about this issue. So sea level rise is a really big risk. It's a creeping long-term risk, and one that we really need to begin to address and deal with. And there's coastal communities up and down, you know, the East and West Coast and along the Gulf Coast, where they're beginning to look at this and beginning to try to plan for increases in storm surge and coastal flooding events as a result of sea level rise. So first, coastal communities are definitely in harm's way. And I'd say that a lot of scientists feel that the water resource issue is a really critical one, and the U.S. Southwest is a place that is at tremendous risk with respect to climate change. We've got a lot of people moving to the Southwest. It's one of the fastest growing population centers. And the climate models show us that as we move forward in time, the U.S. Southwest transitions into a desert region, essentially. And so we know that from a water resource management standpoint, we've got to be really careful with managing our water resource issues. And, you know, the not-so-sexy part of climate change is that, you know, it's things that we can actually do. It's things that we have in our power to fix. It's just sort of having the will to move forward and make the changes that need to be made.
And how about the people who live in the country's Tornado Alley, which has already been smacked pretty hard even this year? Is that yeah. also going to just end up being a place that it's really dangerous to live?
The connection between climate change and tornadoes is a very tricky one, and scientists don't have a full understanding of just yet. We know that there's two ingredients that go into making a tornado. Water vapor is an important ingredient, moisture in the atmosphere, and wind shear. Wind shear is just changing wind speed with height. We know that those two key ingredients are important, but we don't really know how global warming will necessarily affect those two ingredients and how that'll play out in terms of sort of, let's say, where Tornado Alley is in the future, how long the tornado season is in the future. So right now, we really don't know if climate change will play a significant role with tornadoes. But I'd say that one of the things that the past few years has shown us is that, you know, we really need to work on our communications and really make sure that we're getting these warnings out there, because we've just seen a tremendous number of deaths and casualties over the past 2 years.
And is that uncertainty about the impact of climate change true also for hurricanes?
Hurricanes is also an active area of research. Our best understanding right now suggests that we will see more intense hurricanes. So the category 3s, 4s, 5s, we expect to see an increase in those, mostly because of the fact that ocean temperatures are getting warmer, and that warmer ocean contributes more fuel to the storms. But we could overall see fewer hurricanes. So more of the intense hurricanes, but perhaps fewer overall in the Atlantic. And that's sort of where the state of the science is right now, but it's a really active area of research. I wrote a book called The Weather of the Future, which goes into some more detail about some of the questions that you asked. So it might be something that would be of interest to your audience. I think that from the standpoint of women and climate change, what's really interesting is when we look at where Americans stand on this issue, most Americans do believe that global warming is real. But the folks who are really concerned about it are women. And from what we understand about this is that women understand long-term risks, and it's because we have children and we think about future generations. And when it comes to climate change, women are really some of the most powerful voices on the issue. And it's actually really important for women to be powerful voices on this issue, because we see how it can play out and how it moves forward over time. And, you know, there's great resources. Climate Central, where I work, there's a website called Moms Clean Air Force that works on bringing mothers into this issue. So I think that women have a very special role to play when it comes to talking and educating folks about climate change.
Heidi Cullen is chief climatologist at Climate Central. She formerly worked at the Weather Channel and is the author of The Weather of the Future, published by HarperCollins. Find out more at climatecentral.org. And finally, a few months ago, our Art Space segment featured an interview with Melanie, a music icon whose career took off after her appearance at the 1969 Woodstock concert. Her style, which she calls the Melanie Quirk, has been echoed in many of today's popular singers. She's on tour again and will be coming back to Woodstock to perform at the Bearsville Theater on June 2nd before heading off to Germany. She was one of my favorite interviews, and I am delighted to share part of it again.
I don't want to be a household word. I never did. You know, but it just happened.
And you voluntarily pulled back from that for a while, too.
It was a self-imposed exile, I suppose, because at one point, every president of every record label wanted to sign me, but they wanted to superimpose my voice on the latest musical thing. I figure, you know, it's hard enough to get up night after night and sing songs that I loved and really feel and want to desperately get out there. But to do something that I don't even like night after night, I just can't even imagine the price that would be. Nothing could be worth it.
And you and your husband had success when you had your own label, and Brand New Key was on that label, right?
Yes, it was. I was appalled at what Brand New Key did to my, persona in the serious, political, humorless type of underground press. But Brand New Key was the kiss of death. Now, from this vantage point, it's a great song. You know, what a great song. I wish I could write one of those every day.
How was it the kiss of death, Melanie?
Well, because it doomed me to be just cute. You know, this was a time when women, if you were a woman, they only played one an hour on mainstream radio. That's the truth. Did you know that?
I didn't.
One an hour.
That was a rule?
Yeah. One woman an hour. What a way to pit women against each other.
Yeah.
And as a result, I believe, you know, it's very rare that women will credit their women influences to anybody other than dead people.
And would that be why?
If you're only going to have one shot an hour, what is that going to do? I mean, my influences were Billie Holiday and Edith Piaf and Brenda Lee, who is still alive. But I never hear girls who obviously listen to my records, you know, just from the sound of their voice, I can tell, oh, yeah, they definitely heard my record. They never say Melanie, because, you know, unless you're safely out of the picture.
Well, did you think long and hard about your own children getting into music, knowing what it's like?
I wanted to discourage them. There was no choice. They're all musicians. They all write. And Jordy, my daughter in Arizona, sings out every night. And Layla is stepping into her dad's shoes. She's a writer and a singer in Nashville, and we hardly ever get together and sing totally together anymore.
Melanie is touring the U.S. and Germany and will be at the Bearsville Theater in Woodstock on June 2nd. Visit bearsvilletheater.com and melaniesafka.com for more information. That's our show for this week. Thanks to Katie Britton for production assistance. Our theme music is by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. Our executive producer is Alan Shartok. If you'd like to hear this show again or visit the 51% archives, go to our website at wamc.org. You can also find a regular column related to 51% at feminist.com. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another edition of 51%, The Women's Perspective.